Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero, the Dew Sweeper. You're listening to the Tour Coach Podcast, giving you insights into golf instruction at the highest level, from on the PGA Tour to our Learning Center at Frederica Golf Club.
Normally when I do these things, I'm sitting around drinking beer or wine. This time I happen to be coming off of 9 days, no golf swings, no nothing. I'm in the car with Chip Shot driving up from the Keys, back up to Frederica, talking to a good friend and one of the best in the business, Dr. Carton. Greg, what's up, Doc?
Not much, Tony. Good to be on with you. And wish I was going to Fred myself.
Well, you know, we attempted to tape this 10 days ago, but we did have too much wine, and we couldn't tape it. So,
anyway, do it now.
After a nice little mental health break down in the Keys with Chip Shot, we're cruising back up. But I wanted to talk a little about, so the premise of this to me is how to take it from the range to the golf course. And we spent some time, you know, I thought it was interesting the things that we did. And you and I've done this with lots of folks over the years. I think maybe I've gotten a little better at using you and having you help students of all abilities, not just juniors or tour players, but I found it fascinating we had just a couple regular golfers, and when I mean regular, like members that, heck, I mean, really want to play better, not tour players, have jobs, right, work at it, and the question was how to get better at taking it to the golf course. So let's talk a little bit about what we did and talk a little bit about how you help people take it to the golf course.
Sure.
From the range.
Yeah, and it's probably the most common complaint that golfers have, right? So I always view golf as two different pieces. There's the skill development piece that you work on the range, and then there's playing golf. And I think they're two different things. You have to have a certain level of skill, obviously, to compete and get the ball around the course. But they are two different things. But golfers fall into the trap of thinking that just because they hit it well on the range or on the practice green, that that's going to immediately transfer over. The problem is we don't practice the way we play. There's no way to replicate competing on the range, but the closer we can get, the better chance we're going to have at bringing what we can do on the range to the course. So we start with, you know, altering practice a little bit. So making it a little bit more like you're competing, hitting different shots, going through different cadences, or having some intent when you hit shots.
Right.
Now, this is not to replace skill work, right, in block practice and in hitting shot after shot. That's important too. But I think there's two pieces to it. So starting to hit some shots with some intent, picking different targets, hitting different shape shots, challenging yourself to do things maybe that are comfortable or things that you don't know how to do even, so that you can start, you know, tapping into some of that talent and instinct.
You know, I think that when I watch, and this goes for lots of accomplished players too. It's not me, this isn't just isolated to the club level player or whatever, but you know, I see golfers, players that, Doc, that like they do one or the other. They're either like, I see folks that are either really good at going and doing the random practice, but aren't very good at doing block practice, or I see folks that are really good at going to the range and they're good at working on whatever it is I gave them in the lesson, but they don't do anything random that would transfer to the golf course. And so to me, the better players and the ones that really get it understand that you have to do both, and both are important for becoming a better player.
Sure. And I think everyone's always looking for that magic, how much of one should I do and how much of the other. I think a lot of it depends on where you are. And if you're questioning your ability to bring what you know how to do on the range to the golf course, well, maybe it's time to practice a little bit more like you play. If you're struggling with a specific skill and a shot you can't hit, well, then maybe, you know, you got to look for your answers. There's no right way to do it. But I do think it's a combination of the both, and that, you know, you play around with different things. And it's a lot more fun practicing that way, too, I think, if you can grab someone on the range and play games, but also spend time with your block practice, too, and developing the skill. It's just there's no magic sort of concoction. There's no right way to do it. You got to constantly ask yourself the question, what do I need for myself, and then go from there.
You know, and I found it interesting. So we had a gentleman that was in town to work with me in Frederica, Scott, and, you know, +3 handicap from Charlotte, I mean, plus three is really good, man. He was a real plus three. I mean, this guy hit a bunch of great shots. Mm-hmm. Good player, right? And we took him on the golf course. And I felt like of all the stuff that we did that week, I felt like he probably got more out of the retreat of the time that he spent with you than maybe he did with me on the mechanics. I'm not saying I didn't help him. But when it's a plus three to me, like, we're not going to change a ton. I mean, the guy's already damn good, you know?
Yeah.
So, so one of the interesting things was, like, watching him make his way around a green before you talked to him. And, you know, you looked at how mechanical he was and how much thought he was putting in every single putt and every single, you know, shot on the green. And then you did this talk about the exercise you did with him and the results. Because I thought, I mean, to me, it was pretty cool. The results were cool. And to him, I mean, I think he had a hard time believing it at first because it didn't seem to want to be what he found out.
Yeah, exactly. And those guys are a lot of fun to work with because they've done things for so long a certain way, just assuming that there's no other way. Right. So my point in a lot of this stuff is to just show guys that it may not be the right way, but that there's another way to do things. So Scott, who's a great player, admitted that, if there was a weakness in his game, sometimes he struggles on the green. So just observed him on that first green, and he took, a long time to hit pretty straightforward putt. And you could tell in the stroke, it was all he was all bound up, right? Stroke wasn't free. He read the putt from both sides. He was concerned with hitting it too hard, but also didn't want to hit it. Wanted to get it. Like, he went through the whole thing. Yeah, right. And it was sort of the classic example. He almost made it easy for us. So on the next screen, I had him hit another putt in his normal with his normal routine, just as he would try to make it. And then I threw three balls down on the green from different, lengths and breaks. And that time I had him just sort of run up. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not easy putts, and had them just sort of walk up to each one without doing any research and just hit them. And, this happens all the time. The results on those putts were better than the one he did going through his normal routine. So the point of that is to show people that I think, especially on the putting green, we take in a lot of information without even knowing it. And sometimes the more time we spend over a putt, the more bound up we get. And it really sort of traps our skill and keeps it hidden. And to unlock the skill, we need to be more reactive. Like, so you look and then you go, almost like a tennis player, right? Like if you're returning a shot in tennis, you're not so much thinking about your technique or your footwork or anything. You're just responding to what you see. It's the same idea on the green. Just walk up and hit a putt. Now, again, that's not the end of it. You've got to find sort of a happy medium of taking in the information you need, but also allowing your skill and freedom to sort of come out. So I think it was really eye-opening for him. And I think there's a lot of guys like that who get so mechanical over putts that they really lose all feel and skill.
Let me ask you this question. So obviously you have to have good mechanics. I'm not saying you don't.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think, a lot of my belief on putting it's like, the putter goes back this far and through this far. So, there's not a lot of strength, coordination,
right?
So, I've always felt, and I get criticized for being overly simple, but, if we can set you up good to the putter and you have good setup fundamentals, the rest of it, if you go from there and you let your body react, you should be fairly decent, okay?
I agree, right? There's a lot of ways to make the same putt too.
Right. And to me though, it's almost like the worse a putter is, the less they need to think. Whereas to me, that's kind of what the opposite happens. Whereas the worse a putter becomes, the more they try to overthink it, try to figure out an answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that happens all over the course, right? Like, the more we're struggling with one specific aspect, like if we're not getting off the tee, the more time we spend. And then whenever someone works their way out of that, it's always, I did less. I just sort of stepped up and hit it, or I took less time, or I didn't go through my routine. And, I find that to be the case all the time. But our inclination is to try to control that environment more when we struggle. So we go through a longer routine, and we try to sort of do best we can to control every aspect of that environment, when in reality, to unlock our skill and freedom, we have to do less. And you and I joke about this, and I joke about this with my clients, that people really pay me to tell them to do nothing. And that's what it boils down to. But the hardest thing to tell a golfer, to have a golfer do, is to do nothing because of that need to control. You know, in any situation, if you find yourself battling a certain aspect of your game and recognize the fact that you're spending too much time in that one area, challenge yourself to do less and see what happens.
Talk about intent. You use that word a lot with us at Fred. I've seen you use that a bunch with some of the younger folks and the college players that we've shared as clients. Like, I think that helps people. Like, you know, I have you explain it, but it's, you know, you know, I'm going back to the one member Wells that we worked with, and just like, you remember, like, I mean, the guy had no chance to hit a fade, right?
Right.
Hit big draws easy. But the more when we told him to do that, they got better, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, instead of telling himself he couldn't do it, like I said, hit a big draw, and he hit that beautiful draw. Wasn't thinking about any of the stuff in the golf swing that I talked with it before in the lesson the day before. And then, you know, the first time we told him to hit a fade, I mean, he looked at us like we were three-headed.
That's right. Yeah. That's a good point. So there's a lot that goes on in that. And intent to me is adding something. So look, all golfers talk about wanting to stay present, right? You hear that term all the time. I just need to stay present. I want to stay in this moment. And in my opinion, the way we ground ourselves in each moment is to add something a little bit obscure or different or novel to what we're doing. It's very easy as golfers to get stuck on autopilot, where we go through the motions, we go through our routine, there's no engagement in what we're doing. Adding intent, or adding some, the term is novel distinction, a really great psychologist named Alan Langer talks about this a lot, that when we add something different to something that we do all the time, we're much more engaged. So the example I use, and she uses, and I borrowed from her, is, you know, if you were to brush your teeth with the opposite hand, or write your name, or eat anything with the opposite hand, how engaged you'd be in the activity. Well, it's the same in golf. If you hit draws all the time, maybe try to hit a fade and see how engaged you are, and say whether or not you can pull it off. That's not the point. The point is that for that moment, you're engaged in that shot alone, completely engaged, so that nothing else matters. And that's the thing that golfers struggle with all the time, is you go on autopilot, sort of miss all this information, you finish your round, like, shit, I played awful. There was no engagement. Whereas you add a little bit something different to each shot. And again, you play around with it and find something that, whatever that means to you, it's not a one-size-fits-all type thing. But for this example, this guy could never hit a fade before. So having him just sort of intend to hit a fade or think that he was going to try to hit a fade really got him in that moment, and he actually hit the ball pretty well. He was
correct,
engaged,
right?
Because of intent. So I think it's a really powerful skill and a really good one to practice on the range, because that's when we really go brain dead and just start beating balls, and there's no engagement, right? There's no learning going on. So adding a little bit, something a little bit different to each shot is a great way to enhance your practice.
You know, and when I took him on the golf course, which I think some of the most productive things you and I've done is where we go out there with a player on the golf course and we watch him play a couple holes and then we talk to him, you know,
yeah.
And, but was, you know, I said to this guy, I said, you know, where are you trying to hit this? I'm just trying to hit it, you know, at the hole. Well, and it's like,
right.
Well, and he's like, but I always end up over there because it's, you know, that's
yeah, right.
Right. And I said, like, well, you know, what if you tried to hit a draw towards the left side of the green away from the bunker?
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, okay. So he tried that. I was like, you know, that doesn't mean you're going to do it, but at least you're trying
right.
to do something. Is my point.
That's right.
And I think that, you know, golfers get caught up in they grab a club, they get out, and they aim at the green, and they just make their swing. Instead of getting out and saying, I'm 165, this is a 6-iron, I'm going to try to hit a draw 6-iron to the left front of the green. Doesn't mean you're going to do it, but at least you're trying to do a shot.
Yeah, that's right. Well, how about, like, when golfers have those miracle shots they have to pull off where they got to, you know, carve one around a tree and there's really no fear, right? Like, and how often they pull them off. Like, there's such intent and there's no fear because the focus is solely on hitting that shot without any fear of a result. It's such a difficult shot. And that's the ultimate example. And you can play those games on the golf course with yourself with regular shots. And I think Bubba Watson's famous for it, where he creates shots for himself because otherwise he gets bored and loses focus. So he's had to create ways to play that keep him engaged. And, well, it worked for him pretty well. So, you know, there's this old adage that, you know, you want to go out there and just sort of be like a robot and be, you know, on autopilot and just you go through your routine and do the same thing over and over and over again. Yet there's another way to do it. You add some intent or you add some focus and clarity and novel distinction to what you're doing. You can stay more engaged. You can also enjoy the game a little bit more, I think, too.
I think enjoyment is a big part of getting better. I mean,
absolutely.
And I think if you know, and I know this is cliche-ish and everybody, you know, but like I think that if you focus more on, like if your focus is on enjoying it and you get more caught up in the process of enjoying the game and improving, yep. I think your scores will get better, you know?
That's exactly right.
If everything just hinges on how you shoot, I mean, I don't know that, you know, I mean, I think that makes it harder to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, that's delaying gratification. That's a great example. I really subscribe to this belief that we can be fulfilled prior to achieving something, right? In most sports, high-level sports, we just assume that we have to wait to feel good about ourselves until we achieve something versus, well, what if we can flip that? What if we can find fulfillment prior to that? Well, then achievement just sort of gets in the way. It happens. So I think that's another challenge for folks is to challenge yourself to be fulfilled and enjoy yourself prior to achieving something. And I think you'll enjoy the game much more.
You know, and I also think, and I'd love to hear you, but like, you know, if
everything is about, like, I want to win the tournament or I want to break 80, want to break 70, whatever it is. But then when you get there and you've done it, I mean, and it doesn't change anything about who you are. There's like, you know, to me, it's like, well, did I really enjoy or get anything out of doing that? But if you enjoyed the process of trying to improve and you enjoy the challenge of getting better, you know, then I think that when you achieve those things, then you look forward to doing something different. But I mean, to me, if you don't enjoy the process, like the achievements are emptier or more empty or whatever the hell I'm supposed to say, right? You know?
Yeah, that's right. But, well, there's some danger in setting specific goals and that we just assume when we achieve those goals, we'll be happy, right? And what happens is we either fall short of the goals and are miserable the whole time, or we actually, worse, we do achieve them and we're not as satisfied as we thought we were going to be. And now we're really upset. And then we don't get anything out of the game. So finding ways to enjoy that journey, the cliche, right? Like, that's what it's all about. It's how we stay fulfilled and how we enjoy what we do, the small little incremental changes, not these, you know, home run, all or nothing goals. They're great to have. They give us some direction, but, you know, they can also cause a lot of disappointment too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I played down in Key West with a buddy of mine the other day, and it just was random. We got paired with two people and fell into the habit of, you know, we got paired with a guy and a girl had been playing 18 months, right?
And
so my brain, I'm being totally honest, my first thought was like, all right, I'm having a couple cool flights, but like, well, girl, only been playing 18 months. Like, this is not going to be that fun.
Right? Sure. You know? Yeah.
And then I watched, like, how hard she was trying. And, like, every time she hit a good one, she was so pumped up. And when she hit a bad one, it didn't seem to bother. It just went to the next one. And I was like, man, I wish all of my students were like that. You know? Right?
Yeah, there's a lot to learn from watching beginners.
Having a great time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. No, it's refreshing, right? Like, there's such little that beginners need to sort of keep them engaged. When we reach a certain level of competency, all of a sudden we just assume it's always got to be that way. Otherwise, it's not worth it. But what a great example. Yeah, it's fun. You have a lot of my clients go down to the range and just watch kids hit balls. It's the same idea. There's a lot of freedom and there's a lot of excitement and joy, and that's really what the game's all about.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. You know, I see, having taught juniors for a long time, and now I obviously teach some folks that play for a living, but, you know, I know some players that when they were 14, 15, 16 were phenomenal putters, right?
Yeah.
And then this quest, as they get better, seems to be to hit the ball better.
Yeah.
But then they hit the ball better, and then now they're not as good a putters, right? In fact, it would be easy to say that the putting is probably one of their weaker parts of their game. How does somebody go from where, when you're young and you're a good junior player, your putting is maybe the best part of your game, everybody talks about how good a putter you are, to where all of a sudden now you're a great ball striker and the putter's weak? I mean, what happens there?
I think there's very few good putters who are kids or younger or juniors who are mechanical, right, for that reason, right? Like, a lot of guys develop their own strokes, don't have putting coaches at young ages, and go out there and just putt on instinct. So I think that's one of the reasons. And then I think, you know, as you get older and as you become a better ball striker, you have more opportunities to make putts, so it may seem like you're not putting as well, and that can start a whole sort of shitstorm. I need to be better. I need to change this. I'm not making the same amount of putts. You probably are, but because you have more looks, you're hitting better, there's more pressure to make putts, you have to validate good ball striking days, that can cause problems in itself. And then that starts that, you know, quest for mechanics and trying to do the right thing, and you get away from what made you good. I mean, that's not everybody, but I see that happen a lot, right? I think there's so many kids that are good putters because they're just naturally gifted at putting. You don't get a lot of putting instruction as a kid. As much as you do full swing, you're working on developing your full swing, and then when you get on the green, you just go out there and play by feel. Like, I see it with my own kids. Like, when they go get lessons, they get full swing lessons. They want to learn how to hit it, and then they go on the green, and they can actually get the ball in the hole. And then slowly, as you become a more proficient ball striker, well, and then the pressure mounts to be a better putter, and then things start to change. And I think that's where guys start to veer off the wrong path.
So if anybody was listening to us and they feel like, you know, and I hit it, my golf swing's good, I video it, do all the shit Tony or somebody tells me to do, I'm more solid, right? I go, you know, but my scores are getting better. And more importantly, when I play, you know, like, I just don't feel like I'm getting any better with how I play. What would you tell them? How would you change their approach? What would you tell them?
Yep. The first would be, don't assume just because you're hitting a grand on the range that you're guaranteed to be a good golfer or shoot better scores, right?
I don't think very many people understand that just because you practice and you're getting better, that automatically means you're going to become a better player.
That's right. There's no guarantees. Now, you have to do the work and you have to get better, but it never guarantees you're going to become a better golfer. So now, with your new skill, challenge yourself to apply it to playing golf. That's the next challenge, right? So good. You've succeeded in one part. You've gotten better. Well, now there's two parts. Now you have to learn how to play golf and starting to practice in different ways, playing as much as you can, mixing things up is the best we can do. Entering events, challenging yourself to compete, you know, when every swing counts and every shot counts, those are how you get better. But there's never a guarantee that because you strike the ball on the range and make every putt on the putting green that you're going to shoot good scores. It just doesn't work that way. It's a bizarre game.
Like life, though. You know, I mean, and I think that we've been brought up to, you know, if you go to school and you work hard and you do everything right, life's going to turn out perfect. But, I mean, there's plenty of people that do all the right shit and end up living in the gutter somewhere. You know,
That's exactly right.
It happens, right?
It is, and you sort of have to roll with that.
Bad things happen to good people, and great things happen to bad people.
That's right. And golf,
I think that's why we like golf.
Yeah, it is. It's the challenge, right? So I had a funny conversation with a 10-year-old kid. I was playing a few holes with him a couple weeks ago, and I
finally
just asked
found
him,
somebody
you know,
that would play with you.
Yeah, exactly. He's the only guy that wanted to play with me. And he said, you know, and he's good. He hit a bad shot and he got all upset, and then he hit another bad shot and got all upset and kept going. And I said, so let me ask you a question. Why do you love the game? And he said, well, I love the challenge. He says, oh. So he didn't look like he loved the challenge when he hit that bad shot before. He said, you got mad. He said, believe it or not, this is why we play. right? If we developed a certain level of skill on the range and went out and played in line with that skill every single time, while you'd make a lot of money, I think guys would get bored of it, honestly, right? Most of us play because of the challenge. It's not the same all the time. As golfers, we always compare ourselves to when we were our best, right? Like, we have a handicap. That's who we identify with. We shot our whatever our course record or the best score we ever shot. That's who we'll always be. But it doesn't work out that way.
Whenever I sit and talk with you like this, my mind always jumps to situations. Well, I know. But so would that be why, you know, you take guys that we've all been around, we've talked where, like, golf came really easy to them and they were really, really good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they achieved great things, and then golf got hard and they didn't.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what to do. Is that why? Because they never had the...
It happens to a lot of golfers where they're really good juniors and amateurs, and as they move up the ranks, they're not used to challenge. And so those that accept that each stage in their career is different and it's going to bring new challenges, move forward. Some don't. Some really struggle with that challenge. But it's why we all play.
It's interesting, you know, and I think that some, and I don't, but I think some of them then find that maybe they don't really love it.
That's right. You know? They only loved it because they were good at it.
Right, right.
That's,
you know,
that's a great insight.
You know, and I think that, you know, I know I taught one that was unbelievable and still maybe the best player I ever taught. And,
yep.
You know, and then when it became really hard, I think he found that there were other things in life he liked more.
That's right, and that's okay.
Right, right, and that's but like everybody at the time tells him, oh, no, you love the game, you've been great at it, you're going to figure it out, and he's like, shit, I mean, I think I like making money, having a family, and being a normal golfer better.
That's right, that's right.
No?
That's exactly right, and I think that's like there's two pieces. You have to be good, but you also have to love it, and you have to love the shitty parts of it too.
Right. Right, which I think is the hard part about getting better, is that you have to love the part that there's going to be times that are shitty and that you're not good.
Yeah, we know plenty of guys that are good and play for a living but don't necessarily love it. They're good
at it. Right, right. No. Don't you think the great ones, though, have to love it? Like to be the
I do.
Very
I think they have to love the crap that comes with it.
Right, I mean, like Tiger and Jack, and you know, you go through those, I mean...
They love getting better.
Right. Interesting. Doc, awesome stuff. Thanks as always.
Awesome,
man, you're the best.
Always
and thanks
chat.
For being, thanks for all the support for the team and good stuff.
Love it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Tour Coach with Tony Ruggiero. If you enjoyed this, make sure to hit subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you are listening to this podcast. You can stay up to date because we have weekly episodes coming your way with fascinating people in the world of golf instruction at the highest level. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. If you want to learn more about Tony, head over to dosweepersgolf.com to get all the details on what he's up to. Maybe you want to see him, grab a lesson, or go to one of his camps, pick up his book, Lessons from the Legends. You can do that there. If you want to see Tony in action with some videos and other content, head over to golfsciencelab.com/Tony to get more info there. This episode was powered by the Golf Science Lab and was edited, mixed, and produced by Just Hit Published Productions.
As we go into year two of the Tour Coach, it wouldn't be possible without the support of all our sponsors. And I've had some great ones. And one of the things that I'm most proud of in my career and in my business is the fact that all of my relationships here and all these sponsorships have been long time, long withstanding relationships, haven't jumped from sponsor to sponsor and manufacturer to manufacturer. And I've always prided ourselves in special relationships and when people work together, support each other, and we've all put out great products for the benefits of everybody else. So I want to give a special thanks to these folks that have been with me for such a long time. And that would be the folks at Srixon, Cleveland Golf, and Zexio. Couldn't ask for a better manufacturer to be aligned with. And not only do they put out great product and great support, but they're first-class people and they believe in what we're doing here on the Tour Coach and with the Dew Sweepers and also Vineyard Vines. Ian, Shep, TJ, and all the folks at Vineyard Vines,
it's hard to keep me looking good, but they do a fantastic job. And they're like family. They support everything on the Dew Sweepers. And we're so proud to be affiliated with and support the folks at Vineyard Vines. So if you're out there, you're listening to the Tour Coach, please support our sponsors, Srixon Cleveland Golf Zexio, as well as Vineyard Vines, and keep listening and keep enjoying hanging out with us here on the Tour Coach.